stalks the receipt paper. With a few minutes to go before closing time, Marcus barks, "Don't you know any other songs?" The whistling stops for a moment as Beau flips a burger. The burger lands, sizzling against the griddle, and he begins to whistle again. Marcus watches us curiously when at the end of the night we both walk toward Beau's truck. I get into his truck just as his phone rings. He picks it up, and I watch as he listens for a moment. The vein in his neck bulges, his head shaking. Through his clenched teeth, he says something and hangs up before sliding in behind the wheel. "Who was that?" He chews on the inside of his bottom lip for a moment.
"My brother."
"Oh."
"He just needs me to pick him up after I drop you off."
He stares straight out into the field behind Harpies.
"We don't really get along."
I don't have any siblings, but I know what it feels like to butt heads with someone you see every morning and every night.
"I envy him sometimes,"
he says.
"It wasn't the same for him when our mom died. I don't know how true it is, but sometimes I think I absorbed more of the blow than he did."
I nod. I knew Lucy in a way my mom never did. And it's hard not to feel like I carry the heavier burden because of that. "I'm sorry," I say as we're buckling our seatbelts. It's like a hot potato that I've been holding on to for days. "For what I said about you going to private school." He grips the steering wheel and cranes his neck back while he reverses out.
"It's fine."
We sit at the stoplight in silence until it turns green. "What happened then? You were on a scholarship, I guess?"
"Yeah."
I love the way he drives with one hand anchored to the bottom of the wheel as he uses his palm to spin it when he turns, like he's driving an 18-wheeler or something. "Left on Rowlett," I say.
"I was in 8th grade when one of the Holy Cross dads saw me playing. I don't want to say I was really good, but I guess I was. I just didn't know it because no one gives two shits about basketball in this town."
"Except at Holy Cross," I say. Holy Cross is too small for a football team, but their basketball team always wins district and sometimes state.
"Yeah. So I guess a bunch of the dads got together and talked to my dad about me going there. But we couldn't afford it. Not with everything that had happened with my mom. You can't have high school kids' sports scholarships. At least not according to the athletic association they compete in. They put together this academic scholarship for me. And for my brother, too. My dad said I couldn't go unless he went."
"But you said it was your fault that y'all had to leave, right?" I point to my driveway a few houses down. "This is me up here on the left."
"I blew my knee out at the end of the season last year. We didn't have insurance then. So I'm not really sure how everything got paid for. Most of those rich dads, probably. But I wasn't going to be playing anytime soon."
The car idles in front of my house. I wish the drive home were 3 times as long. "But you were on an academic scholarship. They wouldn't take that away from you." He crosses his arms.
"After my injury, I got in a fight with a guy on the team. Colin. That kid who swung by Harpies over the summer."
"Over what?" He shakes his head.
"What every guy gets in a fight over. A girl."
The air in his truck is dense, and I can feel it all the way down to my bones. The girl who was with him?
"Amber. We dated for 2 years, but I was a shitty boyfriend to her anyway."
I want to ask him how, but I don't know if I want to know the answer yet.
"I broke Colin's collarbone. He broke my nose. When we went to enroll for the next year, they said funds had dried up. The donor had to pull their donation. And now my little brother hates me."
"He misses it?" He smirks.
"Yeah. That kid was a king there. He'd been dating the same girl since 7th grade. Who does that?"
He shakes his head, still smiling. I can see what he doesn't say. That he loves his little brother more than is healthy and would probably play on a busted-up knee to make him happy.
"He's a freshman now. He took the whole thing worse than I did. And then, because he's 15 and everything's shit when you're 15, his girlfriend broke up with him. Said she couldn't do long distance.
Long distance?
Yeah. The place is about a 10-minute walk from our house.
Wow. My hand hovers over the door handle.
Let me walk you to the front door, he says.
No, it's fine, he persists.
Really?
We actually use the back door.
Why?
The front door's jammed. It's been like that for a long time.
So why don't you fix it?
He asks. I don't know. Just one of those things we never got around to. And now we're so used to it that it doesn't matter. His lips twitch like he's got something to say, but he stays quiet. I let myself out of the truck and hold the door open a second as a thought forms in my mind. Why have you been sitting next to me these last 2 days? In class? You can talk to me at work. He does that thing again where he brushes his knuckles across his chin.
I guess I would rather talk to you everywhere.
Behind the fence, in my backyard. I smile. I dump the contents of my backpack on my bed, hoping to at least do some homework before I fall asleep. Splayed out between my textbooks, with a bent cover, is the how-to magic book that Mitch gave me. I pull it to my chest and slump down to the floor. I'd completely forgotten about my talent, or even the pageant, for a few days. Bo coming back into my world, if only in the tiniest of ways, turns my brain into a vacuum, where nothing else can exist, because I'm so consumed. But I don't want that. I can't want that. Thumbing through the pages, I find several different tricks, but none of them grab me. A note slips from the pages and I unfold it.
Well, when I was a kid, I went through a magician phase where I wore capes and top hats everywhere. I thought maybe you could use some magic of your own. Mitch.
I slide the note back between the pages and sigh. It's ridiculous. Me, performing silly magic tricks. But what else is there for me to do? I don't have a self-defining talent like Becca, or even something I stuck with long enough to fall back on. I lean back against my bed with the book in my lap, begin to practice the motions of hidden coin illusion. This feels like settling, a missed opportunity, but I don't think that makes it wrong. I try to channel that spark of energy that made me enter the pageant in the first place, but that little bit of magic is nowhere to be found.
Chapter 45. When I pick my mom up from work the next day, she's got a dress bag draped over her arm. She holds her hand up as she gets into the car. Before you say anything, hear me out.
Okay. But I can't hide the apprehension in my voice.
Debbie and I hit up a few thrift stores on our lunch break, and I knew you hadn't gotten a dress yet. And well, you have to get the dress approved in a few weeks, so you don't have much time. You may not realize it, but you can't just buy a dress off the rack. That's not how it works.
I know I need a dress, and I know I'm dragging here, but there is no recipe for disaster so guaranteed as my mother clothes shopping for me. We've been there. We've done that. We still have the bruises.
It's a little on the simple side, but that means we can add our own touches, like it was custom made.
I promise myself that I'll at least try it on. I will give her the benefit of the doubt. Mom lets me get dressed in her room so I can use the big mirror. The door clicks shut behind her, and I realize how odd it is that she doesn't stay. She roams the house all the time in various states of undress, searching for a stray sock or ironing her scrubs. It's not as if she ever instilled modesty in me. But there came a point, maybe around the time I was 11 or 12, when my mom stopped sitting in fitting rooms with me, or brushing her teeth while I was in the shower. I guess it could be that she was trying to be intuitive to whatever privacy needs she figured I might have. But the thought tickling in the back of my mind says that she's not interested in being reminded of this body I wear. Whether or not it's true, it still hurts. I have to give it to her. The dress isn't horrible. It's red. The perfect shade of red that's reserved for sexy nail polish and fast cars,
with a sweeping neckline and straps that hang off my shoulders on purpose. My shoulders don't create the sharp lines I've seen on actresses and models. Instead, they slope at the edges. But still, I like the dress. Until I zip it. It zips. But that doesn't mean it fits. Christ. The fact that I'm able to get the zipper over my hips is a lesson in inertia or just willpower. The fabric pulls against the seams, threatening to tear if I even look at a chair the wrong way. And the top is pretty huge. I can actually tuck my arms in case I get cold or something. All right, I call to my mom. Come on in. My mom stands behind me, and I can see both our reflections there in the mirror. I watch as her gaze travels over me, and her lips dip down at the corners when she sees the way the fabric stresses against my hips. Our eyes meet, and she catches herself. Her mouth presses into a smile. Surely we can let it out a few inches, she says, and tuck it in up top. Her voice is too high and her smile too big, but I don't care. I can ignore those things, because she's making an effort to meet me where I am. What do you think? She pulls the top of the dress back, bunching the spare fabric in her fists. I can almost imagine what it might look like, and I like what I see. It's good. I'm only going to wear it for 20 minutes, right? We can make it work. I sit in the third row of the school auditorium. Millie sits beside me, reading a paperback romance, and beside her sits Amanda, her feet bouncing as she drums her fingers on her thigh. Today's the day we all have to have our talents approved for the pageant. All I've got is the one magic trick I learned from the book Mitch gave me. The rules state that a contestant should prepare a sample, so I'm hoping this is enough. Hannah squeezes down her aisle past Amanda and Millie. I'm out of here as soon as they give me the okay. Don't you think it would be polite to stay for everyone else's talents? Asks Millie. Hannah plops down in the seat beside me, but doesn't bother to answer. Millie's patience for Hannah is slowly slipping, and I get this sick joy from that. I would love to see cheerful little Millie lose it on Hannah's grumpy ass. Once the crowd settles, my mom gives her spiel and says that costumes for the talent portion will need to be approved at the same time as the rest of our wardrobe. The surprises, my mother says, are for the audience. First up is Becca Cotter, who, ta-da, twirls a baton like a freaking superhuman. This time, however, Beau's name is not stamped to her butt cheeks. It's really not fair how much I can't stand her. She's maybe said 20 words to me, but the thought of Beau in a tux escorting her at the pageant turns me into this version of myself that makes my eyes burn. Then there are five girls in a row who sing songs from either Les Mis or Chicago. Karen Alvarez's Chicago performance is deemed too sexy, and she is given 1 week to come up with another song. She slinks off the stage, holding her songbook to her chest. I can tell she's mortified, but it smells of pageant scandal, and I kind of love it. Amanda Lombard, calls Mallory Buckley. Millie pats Amanda on the back as she reaches down under her seat for a duffel bag. Once she's on stage, I notice that she's not wearing her Frankenstein orthopedic shoes. I mean, they still have a thicker heel on one side, but they're more athletic looking. I guess this isn't very traditional, but it's what I'm good at. Her voice shakes a little. She squats down and opens her gym bag to retrieve a soccer ball. Without any further introduction, she begins dribbling the ball back and forth between her knees. It's kind of amazing. She headbutts the ball a few times and even kicks it over her head, but the ball never hits the ground. Here she is doing something I could never even dream of doing with my two legs of equal length. After a few more tricks, she tucks the ball beneath her arm, grabs her bag, and walks off stage. Millie and I clap like madwomen, while the rest of the auditorium is quiet as the committee makes its decision. It takes doubly as long as it has for everyone else, but finally my mom says, in a not-so-impressed tone, Well, that wasn't our usual fare, but it'll do. So I'm approved then? Asks Amanda. My mom nods. Amanda smiles, all goofy and relieved as she sits back down. Next is a monologue for Much Ado About Nothing, which is actually pretty good, but will be totally lost on the judges. Willow Dean Dixon? I reach into my backpack for my prop and walk down the aisle to the stage. As a kid, I remember standing on stage during school productions. The intense lights always made it impossible to see the audience, and that always made the whole thing bearable for me. But today, the theater is lit, and the stage lights are dormant. I can start now? I ask. I try not to count all the girls sitting in the audience, because if I start, I might not stop. Mrs. Clausen, who sits next to my mom, nods. I hold up an empty water bottle and pull a quarter from my pocket. I'll be doing a magic trick. My mom's face is unmoving. I plan on doing other tricks, too, but this is just a sampling. I wait for someone to tell me that that's okay or that I shouldn't worry, but I am only greeted by silence. So here's the quick and dirty of how this trick should work. I take an empty water bottle, which I've sliced a sliver of an opening in. I am to hold the water bottle so that the audience cannot see the cut in the side. After banging on the bottle and proving how normal it is, I hold up a quarter and slap it through the small cut in the water bottle. Bada bing, bada boom. Here in my hands, I hold a perfectly normal water bottle. One that I drank out of this morning to take my vitamins. If I can make my voice sound all magician-y, maybe no one will notice what a hack I am. I tap the water bottle all over. Totally average water bottle. I hold up my quarter. From the front row, my mom squints. I uncap the bottle to show that I cannot fit it through the top. The room is so quiet. Is this why magicians always tell jokes? Or play really intense music that sounds like lasers? I display the quarter once more before gripping it between my fingers like the book said and slapping it into the side of the bottle and through the crack I had created. Voila! I say, which might be cute, except I've spoken too soon. I shake the water bottle, but besides the few stray drops from this morning, it's empty. I hadn't checked to make sure that I was hitting the right side of the water bottle. On the floor, calls Callie from the third row where she sits beside Ellen. Ellen. She chews on her bottom lip. Her in the audience. My shitty talent. This fully lit auditorium. I'm wasting my time with this pageant. I don't think this is what Lucy imagined when she stashed that old registration form away in her room. And it's no one's fault but my own. Tears threaten at the corner of my eyes, but I force myself to hold them back. I look down, and there at my feet is my quarter. Quickly, I bend over to pick it up before shoving it through the other side of the bottle. Worst magic trick of all time. The only applause comes from Millie, of course. I'm still learning, I say. I stand at the edge of the stage as the committee members, my mom included, converse back and forth. Finally, my mother says, approved, but her face says it all. Disappointed, underwhelmed. I squeeze past Hannah and Millie to get to my seat. Weak sauce, whispers Hannah. Oh, like you have anything better planned, I snap. Hannah Perez, calls my mother. Hannah stomps across the stage in her Army Navy surplus boots. Then, thanks to the kid in the sound booth, her music begins to play. It's a song I remember hearing on Lucy's record player, Send in the Clowns. It's the type of song that settles in your bones and makes you sad for a reason you can't quite pin down. Hannah's voice isn't all that amazing, but she really sings it. Like, she wrote it herself. The music crescendos, and so does her voice. I stop seeing Hannah with her usual sour face and her huge teeth and her fading black clothes. And all I see is this girl who sings this heartbreaking song because she gets it, even when the rest of us don't. The music cuts out in the middle of it, fading. And there's a brief silence before every single person in the auditorium claps. When the applause fades, my mom says, Hannah, that was lovely. And she says it in a way that says, now that is how you do it, Dumplin'. Hannah nods and takes the steps two at a time.
She doesn't say thank you. Just grabs her backpack from where it sits at her feet and leaves. I watch every single talent. Callie does sign language to the Titanic song, which I've got to admit is kind of a surprise. Millie plays Somewhere Over the Rainbow on the xylophone, which isn't incredibly impressive, but suits her still. And Ellen clocks to some German folk music. She was on a clogging team all the way up until 7th grade, and she's as bad at it now as she was back then. It makes me smile, and she sees me, but doesn't acknowledge me. When she's done, I clap too loud, and even my mom turns around. As my mom and I are driving home, she lowers the volume on the radio at the stop sign before our house and says, "The talent approval was the only favor you'll be getting from me." She pulls a deep breath in through her teeth. "I get that you don't take this pageant seriously, but maybe you could at least pretend to." She's right. It's not fair to her or Amanda or Millie or Hannah. When I get home, the first thing I do is sit in front of my computer with Riot curled around my feet as I compose an email. The subject line reads, SOS. Chapter 46. In the light of day, the hideaway is nothing more than peeling paint and sticky floors. Beside me, Hannah teeters back and forth in 3-inch heels.
"I'm not wearing these in this pageant."
Li Wei has us all lined up on the stage in high heels, while Dale, the bouncer owner, sits at the bar sipping on a tall boy. The email I sent to him was as transparent as I'd been in a long time. I told him about finding the old registration form in Lucy's dresser, and about Millie, Amanda, and Hannah. "I've got myself in too deep," I told him. "And not only am I going to make a fool of myself, but I'm taking these girls down with me. We need help, the kind you can't find in Clover City." Because the truth is, we have no idea what we're doing. We don't know how to walk or pose or present ourselves. I don't want to go up there and be the fat girl who fell on her ass and fumbled her way through some magic tricks. I'm not naive. I know I won't win. I don't even want to. But I want to go up there and prove that there's no reason I can't do this, or shouldn't be able to. On my other side, Millie is surprisingly silent with her knees locked in place. "Are you okay?" I whisper. She concentrates on the dark spotlight above her.
"I'm trying to concentrate on not falling."
"Bend your knees," calls Lee.
Hannah yanks a thumb in Amanda's direction.
"I don't get why she doesn't have to wear these spike torture devices."
Amanda grins innocently.
"Hannah," says Millie. "You know,"
Lee interrupts with a no-nonsense tone,
"because life is not a river, and we're not all heading in the same direction."
Hannah rolls her eyes.
"And sweetheart," Lee adds, "your attitude needs a make-under."
I ask Lee and Dale to sacrifice their Friday afternoon, and here we are moaning.
"Come on, y'all. Let's get this over with," says Hannah.
Lee clears her throat.
"The first thing you've got to nail down is your walk. Your walk makes you a queen. Because, ladies, it ain't anything that comes out of your mouth that counts as your first impression. It's all,"
she swings her hips to the right and then the left,
"about the motion in the ocean."
From the corner of my eye, I spot Millie chewing relentlessly on her nails. Lee instructs us to sit down while she shows us exactly what she means, and all of us sigh as soon as our asses hit the chairs. She struts up and down the stage, her heels making a distinct thwacking noise with each step.
"You see how I'm walking with one foot in front of the other? Pretend you're taking a sobriety test." "They're in high school," grunts Dale. "Then they should know exactly what I'm talking about. Right, girls?"
The only one of us who nods her head is Hannah.
"So you act like you're walking down a yellow line. And none of those baby steps. Your stride should be as long as your forearm at least."
She takes another lap. The way she moves in her silk robe and endlessly tall heels transforms her from some short, chubby guy dressed as a woman into a glamazon. Maybe I'm seeing what I want to see, but it's hard to think she's anything less.
"You can't hold all your weight on your heel," It's not fair to make those poor little spikes hold you up all on their own. Distribute the work to the rest of your foot. Now, one of y'all try.
I raise my hand. I can do this. I can so do this.
Dale whistles.
Carefully, I take the steps. Lee swings her arm out, lending me the stage.
Give the girls some music, Dale!
I pull in a deep breath. I don't recognize the song, but it's enough for me to ignore the way my toes pinch together and how the balls of my feet feel like they're on fire. My first few steps are long, like Lee said, but slow and tentative. She's right about walking toe to heel with one foot in front of the other. It makes your hips swing, which sets your whole body in motion, like a downhill bicycle. Once you're going, you can't stop. As I turn around at the other end of the stage, Dale whistles again. I walk with purpose and with the knowledge that if this room was packed, every eye would be on me. Lee claps for me and wraps her arms around my waist. Her head presses against my boobs, and for a brief moment, I remember that she is a he. I wish every day of my life could be this absurd. I want Lucy to see this, to see that I've connected the dots of her fragmented life. And here I am. I watch as Hannah trips across the stage, fallen not once, but twice. Halfway through her walk back across the stage, she tears her heels off and throws them into the empty audience. And the whole time she's laughing, which isn't something I can say I've seen her do much of. Millie's walk is measured and careful. Lee reminds her over and over again to keep her eyes on the horizon and not on her feet. A few times she holds her hands up for balance, but she makes it. And Amanda? She's so comfortable in her own shoes that she barely requires any coaching. Before we drive home, the four of us sit at the bar while Dale makes virgin cocktails for us, and not-so-virgin cocktails for Lee. Lee tells us about stage makeup and what kinds of clothes make statements until she's had so many cocktails that her head is slumped against the bar.
I wish I'd known girls like you when I was in high school.
Why?
Asks Hannah.
You like being made fun of?
Lee shakes her head.
No. No. I wish I would have had friends that were going after things they weren't supposed to have.
I was so scared of myself at that age. I was so scared that all the big things I wanted would never be anything more than wants.
Dale comes around the other side of the bar.
I better get you home before I have to open tonight.
Lee sits up.
It got better,
she says.
Look at me. I'm living my dream. I'm in love. I'm happy. But I waited for that to happen to me. And y'all are making it happen now. Y'all are going for it.
We sip our drinks for a moment. I don't say anything, but her words bring something inside of me to life. Like, I'm using a muscle I forgot I had.
Thank you for helping us today, says Amanda, even if I can't wear heels.
With the help of Dale, Lee pops off her bar stool.
Child, you don't need heels. You're fierce all on your own.
She walks down the row of us and kisses each of our cheeks. Millie reaches to hug her, and Lee doesn't pull away. As Dale is getting her in the car, we gather our stuff and load up into Amanda's mom's van. The drive home is quiet. Not even Hannah has anything snarky to say. Millie makes a stop at a grocery store for a thank you card. We each sign it, and Millie promises to drop it in the mail. There's something different about us. I can feel it. It's not a walk or a makeup tip. It's not anything you can label or take a picture of. But I feel it like you do a birthday. Nothing you can see, but something you intuitively sense.
Chapter 47
Dumplin', you have a guest!
I storm down the stairs. Beau volunteered to pick me up, but I specifically told him to text me when he was outside. I guess he's not one for following directions. Last night as I was getting into bed, my phone chimed. I should have known better, but for a second, I thought it might be Ellen. Beau.
Hey, you want to study for that world history test this weekend?
I replied yes without even stopping to think if I should. Now Beau stands in the kitchen next to my mom, who's still sipping on her coffee. She makes a show of turning her back to him and wiggling her eyebrows at me. I'm going to Bo's to study, Mom. Her cheeks are so red she could be drunk.
You two behave!
Bo slides the door open and waits for me to walk out first.
Don't you forget to get that quote from your dad, sweetie!
She yells to Bo in a sing-song voice. We round the corner into the driveway. What was that about? I ask.
Yeah.
He motions to my house.
We were talking about that front door. My dad, he's a locksmith, but he fixes doors a lot, too.
We drive in silence for a while before I say, My mom's a total nut. I'm sorry.
You guys look alike.
I try to swallow, but my mouth is dry as can be. No one's ever said that about me and my mom. It's always Lucy.
You look just like your aunt.
I'm not ashamed of that, but I like the idea of looking like my mother's daughter.
In a good way,
he says. Based on what Bo told me about him being on scholarship, I figured he didn't live in a new neighborhood. But I wasn't quite expecting this. His house, with its well-maintained lawn, sits on a street of sagging roofs, chipping paint, and overgrown yards. Bo pulls into the crumbling driveway.
This is my place.
I follow him up the walkway to the front door, which has a hand-painted sign hanging from it that says, Unless you're selling cookies, no soliciting, please. Bo's house is warm, but not uncomfortably so. It's one story, and considerably smaller than mine. The furniture is at least 2 decades old, but it all matches. I wonder what it must be like for a stepmom to live in the house his mom made. The place smells distinctly of incense, which doesn't at all match everything else. I wonder if maybe my house smelled anything like me to Bo. I don't know where I expected Bo to live, but it was not here.
Let me introduce you to my stepmom.
I follow him the short distance from the front door to where the incense is burning in the kitchen. Bo's stepmom is cursing at the ice machine in the freezer. A small puddle of water with stray cubes of melting ice floats at her feet. She's not as polished as she was when I saw her at the mall, but she's still pretty in a way that my mom isn't. In an unprepared way. Without the manicures and the makeup and the hairspray.
Lorraine, says Bo. This is Willow Dean.
She whips around with a big steak knife in her hand.
Oh!
She laughs and drops her arm to her side.
The girl with two names. I remember you.
Bo nods. She smiles and hugs me with one arm. Not the knife Karen arm. He coughs.
Everything okay with the ice maker?
She holds the knife up again, like she's about to stab something.
Oh, just all frozen inside, trying to break some of it up so your dad doesn't have to deal with it. He got called out on a job during breakfast.
We're going to study in my room,
says Bo. Lorraine's eyes bounce back and forth between us. I'm waiting for her to say something like, Maybe you should study out here, or leave the door open. Instead, she says,
Let me know if you need anything.
His room isn't dirty, but lived in. There are traces of him at every age. Posters for bands I'm surprised he's even heard of. A basketball on his desk with a few signatures. A bowl of red lollipops of all kinds. One of those corner-ceiling hammocks filled with stuffed animals. And a framed San Antonio Spurs jersey. He closes the door behind us, and I think that all the air there is left to breathe in the world is sealed in this room. When it runs out, that'll be it. The death of me in Bo Larson's bedroom. We sit on pillows on the floor with our books and notes spread out. For a bit, we talk about what might be on the exam. But all I can think is, Bo's room. He sleeps here. Bo, this is where he takes off his clothes. Beyond Bo's head, hanging on his doorknob, is an oversized ring full of keys. What's the deal with the janitor keys? I ask. He glances over his shoulder.
Oh, from my dad.
He scoots around and leans against the bed. I do the same.
I started collecting them when I was a kid.
My dad would get me to help him clean out his van by telling me I could keep whatever spare keys I found. They're mostly miscuts or old keys people couldn't use anymore.
Her hands sit splayed out on the carpet, her fingers not even an inch apart. Do you still help him? He shakes his head.
Things changed when I started going to Holy Cross. I was always busy with basketball. And friends, I guess. I don't know. I started feeling too important for his stupid keys. You know how you start getting these big plans for your life, and suddenly all the work your parents do feels so meaningless? And I guess I was embarrassed by him. I got pretty used to seeing all the dads at Holy Cross in their polo shirts and khaki pants, that I started to beg my dad not to pick me up in his van. He shakes his head. I was an asshole. I still am sometimes.
I think being embarrassed by your parents is as much a part of growing up as getting taller. He smiles with his lips closed.
I used to love watching him pick locks. Just the way he'd stand there listening to the lock like it was his favorite song. And then it would click.
I don't know if it matters, but I don't think you're an asshole. For the most part.
It was my dad, he says. My ex-girlfriend, Amber. I was horrible to her. She wanted so badly to be there for me. She went to every single one of my games, even the away games if she could swing it. And all I did to thank her was take her to dark movie theaters to fool around or hang out in her dad's TV room and watch basketball. I thought she was using me as some kind of status symbol, so I figured it didn't matter. But she wasn't getting anything from me she couldn't get anywhere else.
My mouth goes sour. This scenario sounds too familiar, and it's nothing I want to revisit. What does Lorraine do? His entire body blushes and he covers his face with his hand so that I can barely see him.
She throws romance parties.
Wait. I try so hard not to laugh. I'm sorry. What did you say? He throws his head back against the bed.
Romance parties.
Like, sex toys? He turns an even deeper shade of red. My mom works at a nursing home. I tell him to try to save him, even if his blushing may be the most adorable thing ever. He turns to face me, his color fading.
I thought she was the beauty pageant lady.
She is. She's the beauty pageant lady who wipes your grandparents' asses by day.
Wow, he says. I never would have thought.
I sigh. The glamorous life.
So you really entered the pageant?
Yeah, I nod. Why? Everyone seems to have something to say about me entering, and I'm sure Beau is no different.
Well, I've always thought pageants were dumb, but I thought that about Dolly Parton, too.
I smile. Right answer.
What about your aunt?
He asks.
The one that passed away.
I swallow. She didn't work. She was on disability.
Oh, so it was kind of expected? I mean, that doesn't make it better. I meant that...
No. My voice is soft, but he hears me. It wasn't expected. He waits for me to speak. She was big. Not like me. Like 500 pounds big. She had a heart attack. She took care of me, though. Like a second parent.
I wish there was something better to say than I'm sorry.
We sit there for a few minutes watching the shadows created by the blowing tree limbs outside of his plastic blinds.
I think he was kind of happy when I lost my scholarship.
Why would he be happy about that? I ask, knowing without a doubt who he is. He crosses his arm, and when he does, his hand brushes mine. Every little thing, hands touching and door sealing, sends a shooting warmth up my spine.
I don't even mean happy, really. More relieved.
He leans his head back again and watches the mini basketballs hanging from the chains of his ceiling fan. I imagine it must be weird to live in this shrine dedicated to a sport he can't play anymore.
I think I was on this path to get out of here. I was good at basketball. Good enough to get noticed by some smaller colleges. And maybe he saw that too. But I was never supposed to leave Clover City. Before Holy Cross, I was supposed to live here and die here working with my dad.
Each word is familiar to me. His truth is my truth. There's a version of the future in my head where I stay here forever. I watch my mom work until the day she dies. And then it's just me in that house with its broken front door, full of pageant supplies and Dolly Parton records. Bleak, I know, but still, there's a bit of comfort that comes with knowing how your life is going to turn out. I've never had a surprise turn out in my favor.
I don't blame him,
he continues.
It's that feeling of people leaving. It's scary.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I think maybe we're both talking about a different kind of loss. The kind that can't be fixed with a plane ticket. There's a knock at his door.
Come in. Hey, son.
Beau's dad is a shorter version of Beau. Sturdy and broad. He notices me and nods.
Dad, this is Willow Dean. We go to school together. She works at Harpy's, too.
I stand up. Good to meet you, Mr. Larson. He waves a hand at me.
Call me Billy.
He turns to Beau.
I need your help swapping this tire out on the van real quick.
Sure.
Beau hops up and promises he'll be right back. I stand there for a moment, in Beau Larson's bedroom, by myself. On his desk, next to the sign basketball, are three frames. The first one is Beau from a few years ago. He's wearing a Holy Cross jersey and has a basketball tucked beneath his arm. He looks younger with his close-cropped hair and a stubble-free face, but the outline of his biceps foreshadows the next few years, a promise of the Beau I know today. The next one is old and kind of grainy, like it might have been taken on a cell phone. It's Beau's dad, Beau, and his brother Sammy. Beau looks no older than 9. The three of them are on a dingy-looking beach, definitely a Texas beach, with the water at their backs. Beau stands alongside his dad, with his arms crossed and his feet spread wide. Mr. Larson holds Sammy over his head like a dumbbell. The final frame is his parents' wedding photo. And now I see where Beau gets his height from. Mrs. Larson had at least 3 inches on her husband. She wears a light yellow tea-length dress with gold sandals and her hair loose around her shoulders. It's a candid photo. Mrs. Larson's head is thrown back in laughter, while Mr. Larson wears the grin I've seen on Beau so many times.
She was beautiful. A total Scorpio, too.
I turn. Lorraine stands in the doorway, wearing a quiet smile. I'm sorry, I say, but for what, I don't really know. I was waiting for Beau to get back.
Nothing to be sorry for.
I chew on my lip for a moment before asking, did you know her?
Only in passing, but from what I hear, she was a good one to know.
I look at the picture once more.
Come have some tea with me, Lorraine says.
Most women in the South take great pride in their iced tea and pass the recipes down from generation to generation. But Lorraine is not most women. She mixes her tea with powder from a box. To my mom, powdered iced tea is almost as bad as the possibility of being left behind in the wake of the rapture.
You want some lemons?
She asks. Yeah, that'd be great. I squeeze 2 lemons before taking a sip. Delicious. Like frozen lasagna. Wherever my mom is, she's just fainted. Lorraine sits down in front of me with a glass for herself. She's one of those people who could be 25 or 45, and you wouldn't be able to tell the difference.
What's your sign, Willow Dean?
Pardon?
Your star sign. Astrology?
I don't know. According to my mom, astrology is 2 steps away from demonic possession. I never really paid attention before. She shakes her head and tisks.
I'll never understand how it is people navigate their whole lives without knowing their signs. What's your birthday?
August 21st.
Ah, she says. A Leo, but barely.
I lean in.
What's that mean?
I'm learning a whole new language for the first time.
You, my dear, are a lion.
She says it with such great dramatics, but it's lost on me. She sighs.
You're the king of the jungle, baby. Walk in confidence.
Yep, this is total bullshit. She waves a finger at me.
Don't write me off so soon.
There's more. You're a fire sign. You love big, but you hurt big too. But you don't always let the hurt show because it's a vulnerability. You're the sun, always there, even when we can't see you. She believes this so wholly that it's pretty difficult for me not to buy into it too. And I like the idea that somehow I am the way I am because it was meant to be.
But,
here it is, the other shoe is about to drop.
You need approval too, and that flaw is big enough to stop you. What's important to remember though is that despite our signs, we still make our destiny.
It's hard not to notice how true her words feel. How do you know all this stuff?
Everyone's got their own religion, right?
She shrugs.
Even if their religion is no religion.
What are you?
She grins. A Sagittarius. But what's really interesting is Beau's sign in relation to yours.
I am hooked. She's got me. And she knows it.
Beau is an Aquarius, just like his dad. Detached and brooding, but with a good heart.
It takes me a second to realize I'm nodding.
According to the stars, you two are quite the pair.
She sips her tea and winks at me. I know that pair could mean anything. Friends, cohorts, partners. But that doesn't stop my cheeks from feeling as warm as a sunburn. She reaches for my knee.
Oh, sweetheart, are you okay?
I nod a little too fast.
Do you... Where's the restroom?
My face is on fire. Her brow wrinkles with concern.
Two doors past Beau's on the left.
I get up and turn back to her as I stand on the threshold between the kitchen and the dining room.
I like talking to you, I tell her.
I hear the garage door open.
You're always welcome to come by for a chat.
In the bathroom, I splash my face a few times. I want to wake up every day, like that old movie Groundhog Day, and relive this day over and over again. Here, though, by myself, it's hard not to wonder if he ever brought Becca home, or if Amber got along with his stepmom as much as I feel like we did. Beau is waiting in his room. He's changed his shirt and has moved our books and notes to his bed.
To his bed!
But the door's open, and I'm slightly grateful for it, too. Because how do people even function like this? Like, how is it that people can even pump gas or pay bills or tie their shoes when they're in love? Or might be in love? Or are in love? Or are in between the two? My phone buzzes in my pocket.
Mitch, what are you doing tonight? Want to grab some tacos? Watch a movie?
I exit out of my messages.
Who's that?
Asks Beau.
No one, I say. Just my mom.
We study for the next few hours until it's time to turn his bedside lamp on. We've both slid from sitting positions and are slumped against pillows in a sea of papers. When he drives me home, I find myself addicted to the comfort of him. I've spent an entire day being so myself. Not a daughter or a niece or a token fat girl. Just Willow Dean. The feeling of it makes me miss Elle. But I'm tired of other people making me feel this way. I'm ready to make myself feel this way. I like Lorraine, I tell him.
She has a way of making people do that. Infectious, my dad says. I tried really hard not to like her.
But the harder I tried, the more I wanted to like her. She doesn't try to be my mom. Not like some other ladies would. She's something else to me, though. Not a friend, but not a mom. I don't know.
And that, right there in those handful of words, is how I feel about Lucy. But there's no real term for it. And I sometimes think that makes the pain of losing her that much harder to reconcile. He parks in front of my house. So, is that what you normally do on Saturdays? Study at home? I want to know everything about every minute of his life.
Yeah,
he says.
Unless my dad needs me.
What about Sundays? We're off every Sunday, which means it's this one day a week where Beau is a complete mystery to me.
I go to church. Mass, I go to Mass.
Wait, you're actually Catholic? He doodles designs on his steering wheel with his finger.
I don't know.
How can you not know? The streetlight reflects off the silver chain peeking out from his collar.
Coach used to always have us go to Mass during the season, and I guess I got in the habit.
How punny. His lips form an uneven smile.
I like the tradition of it.
Does your family go too? He laughs.
Not a chance.
The quiet of my street seeps in through the cracks of his truck. I better go, I whisper. He leans toward me and hooks his hands behind my ears, pulling me to him. Our lips brush, so light it tickles. But it's not quite a kiss.
I want to kiss you. I want to kiss you very soon.
His words spill right into my mouth.
But I'm not going to mess us up this time.
I have so many questions, but I think I've got enough for today. He drops his hands, letting his fingers trail down my cheeks.
Come to Mass with me tomorrow.
I bite in on my lips. Okay. Chapter 48. The minute I walk inside, reality crashes down around me. Mom is working on my dress and watching some Lifetime movie with the volume turned up too high. I want more than anything to call Elle and tell her about every inch of these last 2 days. Lee Wei, Dale, Beau, Lorraine, all of it. I slump down into a chair at the kitchen table and swipe through my phone until I find our last texts from almost 2 months ago. I hit compose. Me. I spent the day at private school Beau's house. He likes me a lot. We talked about everything and nothing. He almost kissed me, and it was the most amazing non-kiss ever. I'm trying not to think about Mitch. I've ignored his texts all weekend. How can having such an incredible day make me feel like such a shitty person? I miss Lucy. And I miss you so fucking much. I apologize. I apologize for everything I have ever done wrong. A blanket apology. I stare at the words, wondering what might happen if I hit send. I press the delete button because the fear of her not responding is too great for me to risk it. Beau texts me when he arrives, which is perfectly timed because my mom is getting in the shower.
I'll be back later,
I call to her. If she asks where I'm going, I don't hear her over the water. I'm not even trying to hide that I'm going somewhere with Beau. It's that I'm going to church with Beau, because my mother would rather me not go to church at all than go to a Catholic church, which makes no sense to me. Catholics, Protestants, Christians, Baptists, they all believe in the same things, I think. They just have different ways of saying it. I guess we're Baptist. I mean, my mom goes to Clover City First Baptist, and so do I on holidays. Beau, in his pressed khaki pants and black polo, is leaning against the passenger door waiting for me. I feel slightly overdressed in my black dress, the one I wore to Lucy's funeral. But it's the only church-appropriate thing I own. He holds the door open for me, and we drive the whole way there with our hands on the bench seat between us. Nothing but our pinkies touch. And it feels like a spark on the verge of a flame. I have never in my life been inside a Catholic church. I imagine they're all these ancient buildings with steeples, stained glass windows, and those kneeling benches like you see in movies. Holy Cross is newer, though. There are still pews with kneeling benches and stained glass windows. It's quieter than my mom's church. More peaceful. There are no boisterous greeters or gossipy Sunday school teachers. It's nice. At both sides of the altar are candles and red votives, but not all of them are lit.
What are those for?
I whisper to Beau after we've found a seat in the middle of the church.
You're supposed to leave a dollar or something in the collection box and light a candle in memory of someone. And I guess say a prayer if you want.
Service starts, and after a few announcements and some hymns, the collection plate is passed around. Beau pulls a crumpled 10 from his wallet and drops it on the plate before passing it along. Father Mike gives a sermon. I guess I expected it to be in Latin or something, but it's not. It's in English. Each word is measured. The whole thing feels a little bit like a ceremony. Like when I was in Girl Scouts and I went from Daisy to Brownie. After the service, I follow Beau to the candles where a few other people have gathered. He drops a few dollars into the lockbox and gives me a stick to light a candle from a larger candle. We both light a candle. Neither of us says who the candles are for, but we don't have to. I imagine what it might be like to do this every Sunday with Beau. Even if I don't know if all of this is something I believe in, it's nice to be part of something. With him. We walk outside to the parking lot, where all the socializing is happening. Beau waves to a few people. He points to a man in a navy blazer and khaki pants.
That's my coach.
It breaks my heart to hear him talk about this man so firmly in the present, as if he still was his coach.
Beau!
It takes me a moment to recognize him, but it's Colin. That same guy who came and visited Beau at Harpy's. He jogs toward us.
Hey!
He says, pointing at me.
I recognize you.
I feel myself recoiling. Beau holds his hand out and the two exchange a firm handshake that looks more like a show of strength. But there's none of that suffocating tension radiating off Beau like there was the last time these two saw each other.
What's up, man?
Asks Colin. Beau shrugs.
Work? School?
A few other guys from the team are heading over now. I feel like the elephant in the room. Or the parking lot. Literally and figuratively. He shakes each of their hands. They ask him about school and his knee and if he's going to try to do some rehab to get back on the court. My shoulders ease a little as I almost start to feel invisible. Then Colin points to me and says,
And what about this one? Is she your girlfriend now?
Beau glances over at me and says,
This is Willow Dean.
He turns back to his friends.
And I'm working on it.
Then he takes my hand. He holds my hand. Right there in front of everyone. I am equal parts thrilled and mortified. A few of his friends whistle as he says bye and we walk to his truck, hand in hand. We sit in his car, waiting in line to turn out of the parking lot. What was that about? He brushes his knuckles over his chin.
I told you I want to do this the right way, and I'm done keeping you a secret. I didn't even mean for you to feel like a secret in the first place. I don't know. Sometimes good things happen to you at the absolute worst time. You were a good thing, Willow Dean.
What about Becca?
And what about her?
Aren't you guys dating? He scoffs.
Hardly. We went out a few times.
He pauses.
Okay. I guess we kind of dated. But I was trying to get over you. Or maybe make you jealous, I don't know. And I didn't expect for you to be all over that jock, so I guess I was the jealous one.
Mitch. His name's Mitch. He's not that guy. He's my friend. He doesn't respond for a minute.
Is he anything more than that?
No, I say. Like I'm shocked by the idea. I feel his gaze on me.
I don't know.
Oh, God. Of course we're more than friends. At least to him we are. And maybe sometimes for me, too. Technically, we're not anything. But he wants more.
Do you want more?
He asks.